You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Welcome to the Queen Comedy Podcast. It's James. It's only me this week. I don't have my co-host, Danny. He is not available. But instead, I have probably one of the funniest comedians that I've heard in a long time. First of all, I saw him on Dry Bar, and then I downloaded his new album. It's new, right? Is your album
yeah,
new?
Brand new. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So funny. And we have a common link, and we'll get into that in the show. But please welcome Andrew J. Rivers. You are so funny, dude.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. We could just do this the whole show, and that's a good interview for me.
Yeah, it's awesome. So I first saw you on Dry Bar. You did a thing about gun enthusiasts and a bomb shelter, which I thought was hilarious because I grew up in Texas, so there's a lot of people like that too. And I know you said Idaho, but if you went to Texas, you probably could have the same experience.
Sure. Yeah, I just got kind of lucky. I got introduced to this guy who was kind of a, you know, for lack of a better term, he is kind of a nut. I in the story, I give him his due, but it's really a story about sort of two unlikely people coming together and seeing each other's point of view, you know, because I was just, you know, whatever, in my late 20s or probably 30 years old at the time I met this guy. And, you know, thinking the world is perfect and everything's great. And I'm like, why would you ever need a bomb shelter? And then Trump got elected and I'm like, oh, maybe things aren't as stable as I think they are. You know, maybe he's got a few points, you know, this could all come tumbling down very quickly. So, he's been an interesting friend to keep over the last couple of years. He just has a unique perspective on things and, not one that I would regularly interact with. So I think it's important to keep a little bit of people that disagree with you on stuff, just so you don't become too extreme on one side, maybe.
I agree with that 100%. I always like to hear different perspectives because it's opened my mind a lot. I'm not sure. Yeah. I know you're on Reddit or whatever. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the anti-work subreddit, but that's really got me lately, where it's like, oh my gosh, there's all these stories of people being mistreated. And I always thought, I always had like that hustle grind mindset of like, if I just work hard, I'm going to be, you know, rich and do this. And that's not the truth really, you know? So it was crazy.
I mean, that's what I kind of discovered thanks to Dry Bar a little bit is, you know, I got my videos got a couple million views and then I started just selling out my own theaters because I could use those videos to advertise. And, and even if people hadn't heard of me, it gave me a little credibility because they would be like, oh, this has 5 million views. It must be good, you know? and so like in my career, I've tried to get on TV for certain things and I've tried to go mainstream routes and I was almost on a TV show and then they kicked me off the day before without any warning. And so, you know, you really got to take your own career into your own hands in a similar fashion. So,
yeah, no, so that wasn't The Bachelor, right? You didn't get kicked off The Bachelor. The Bachelor.
No, I wish they didn't take my application. You know, it's a funny story. I tried to find love on a reality show this year because I got sent. It was an application. They would send you like a questionnaire first, you know, what would you do if you won $1 million? And I was like, vote Republican, you know, and so then they end up calling me for an audition, but it's over Zoom. And they're like, hey, we're with Discovery Channel. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but I didn't sign a contract and they didn't put me on the show. So screw them. But they go, hey, we're working on a dating show with an animal kingdom twist where you have to attract a mate with nonverbal cues. And I was like, oh, wow, you want me to pee on her leg and sniff her butt or something like that? Go, you're hilarious. And then they never put me on the show. But yeah, I've tried for all sorts of things. So I'm on your podcast. That's what it's resorted to. Just kidding.
That's all good. But we have like Barry Katz and like a couple of other people like that. We've had good.
I'm teasing you. I'm happy to be anywhere. Yeah.
I'm glad. I think you're hilarious. Like I listened to your album. I had to go. I forgot where I had to go. Oh, I had to go pick up a cotton candy machine for Halloween. And I don't know if you're familiar with the LA area, but I had to go out, like, it was about a 45-minute drive. So I listened to your album.
10 miles up the street?
Yeah, sometimes it can be, right? So I listened to your comedy album on the way there, on the way back. And as I was getting Del Taco, it came to the part where you're talking about dating the girl that was on The Bachelor. And I lost it because I worked on The Bachelor for 2 seasons. I worked on 1 season of The Bachelorette and 1 season of The Bachelor.
Interesting. Yeah, I want to hear all about this, actually.
Like,
were you like one of the producers manipulating the people? Were you like, no, he really loves you? Or like, how did that work?
Yeah. No, I was a production assistant, so PA on there. Okay. And so we worked the house where we would bring up all the food, all the stuff. We'd go get things when they weren't rolling. We helped set up for, you know, the rose ceremony. We greeted them the first night. I was on the season with Ari, who was the race car driver guy. So we also like helped him get the race car into the thing. And it was crazy. It was a fun time. It was super fun and seeing it, but it was just like chaos. Like there's more alcohol at the Bachelor house than a Vegas nightclub. I'm not kidding you.
I tell you what, I was texting my friend on the show. Cause I was like, you know, she got on during like the pandemic year and I think during the pandemic, everyone was drinking a lot. So I'm not trying to call her an alcoholic, but she would kind of drunk FaceTime me, you know, a couple of times here and there. And so during the show, I was like, oh, no wonder you were drinking so much. You were getting your tolerance up for filming a TV show. Like, I think that they do it on purpose just so that the people will provide a little more entertainment or be a little loosey goosey.
Well, they also sleep them in bunk beds at the house. So all the girls sleep in bunk beds. So there's not really a lot of good sleep. And lights are on most of the time. So they don't really sleep well. So they're sleep deprived and pumped full of alcohol. And then, you know, it's a compressed time frame from what you see. You think it's like weeks. It's not that long. It's like a month. And they're just like, whoo, do it. So, and they're back to back to back.
That's what I always thought was hard to find love, you know, is like how much time – 20 minutes a week are you spending with a particular person, and then you got to make a decision in 5 or 6 weeks, and then you know you've spent a grand total of maybe a couple hours together. Like I can see someone picking a girlfriend or a boyfriend, and then we just go, we'll just get married because it's the show, and we don't you get engaged, you know what I mean? You don't have to actually go through with the contracts and stuff like that. So it does provide a nice little life story, but it doesn't appear to be the best place to find love. She's gonna come back to me eventually. I just know it.
There you go. So tell us a little bit about how you got started in stand-up, like what that process was, kind of your journey there, because that's always interesting to see how people got into stand-up.
Well, I was working at a marketing agency and I hated it, and I remember looking out the window, it was like a sunny day. It was one of only 10 sunny days we get in Seattle. And I was sitting there going, like, we had a dog park across the street from our office building. And I was like looking at people playing with their dogs. And I was like, I don't want to sit at this computer the rest of my life. And then like 2 weeks later, they laid me off. And I was like, oh, I don't know who was listening to that, but you know, I could have stuck it out a few paychecks longer. And so like, I ended up giving a speech at my brother's wedding, and it's funny because I've heard my brother retell the story. There's no video of the incident. There's no recordings of it, audio, because this is 12, 13 years ago. Where, you know, no one really had like iPhones. It wasn't really like that. It's amazing to think how far we've come in a short time, but no one recorded it. No one thought to record anything. And I was very shy. Like I didn't talk a lot. My brother was like social butterfly, and I got beat up in high school. So we're complete opposites. And so I gave a speech at his wedding, and I kind of roasted him a little bit. And then everyone came up to me after the speech And they were like, that was so funny. You should do comedy. And I was sitting next to my dad. And I just remember seeing his face being like, that's my boy. And so that sort of instilled in me like, oh, my dad will love me if I am funny, you know, as we all search for our love from our respective peers and parents and stuff. So just a couple months later, I couldn't get another job. And I just was trying to find another job. And my dad kind of suggested like, well, everyone thought you were funny at the wedding. Why don't you give an open mic a shot? And so I just kind of signed up and I had no idea what I was going to do or what, you know, just insane. It's an insane thing to even start doing, you know, it's looking back on it. And then I just felt at home on stage a little bit. Like it was like, oh, people, as a person who's shy, I think, I wasn't used to being the center of attention nor having it. So it's a little bit of like, it's cool to get a group of people to listen to me, you know, yeah. in a certain sense. So that was what really kind of got me started. And then a couple months later, I was out drinking and I got punched in the face at a nightclub, in the alley, just because I still have no idea who did it. They just, you know, obviously I didn't see it coming. Otherwise I would have beat that guy up, but, it just, someone blindsided me and whatever. And then I just kind of was like, you know, you know, my parents always use the phrase like, you got your sense knocked into you, you know, and I really believe that because I was like, what am I doing drinking all the time and like not doing anything or not advancing my life? And so I was like, you know what? I haven't been punched at the comedy club yet, although I deserved it early on. And so I just was like, I'm going to do this more often. And, you know, I was on unemployment, which is funny because I got laid off. So my parents were very supportive because my dad was in radio and he told me that his dad, you know, 60s dad, was not supportive of his career in radio. And so he didn't want to do that to his kids. So he was like, go for it. And he said, you know, take all the government money you can. It'll be your Obama comedy scholarship is what he called it, which was really funny because now, you know, here we are 12 years later and I had to get unemployment again. Yeah. Although this time it was Trump University. So, once the unemployment ran out after 2 years, I was like, I'm already poor. So this is fine. And, this is what I want to do. And there's sort of a mentality for better or worse that if you have a plan B, you'll take it.
Yep.
You know? And so a part of you just needs to commit. And so I lived in my car for a couple months at a time where I'd move my stuff into storage because I didn't want to pay rent. And then I would sort of drive around the country and I would make friends in each city. So like after a few trips, I would have a friend in Indianapolis who was like, hey, you can stay here anytime you want. And so then I sort of had a home away from home in Indianapolis so I could go to Chicago, come back, go to whatever and come back. And that really cemented, because the idea is just to get on stage as much as possible, right? And if you're not, and even if you're doing a set every night in Seattle, if that's just a 5-minute open mic, you know, you're not really getting to stretch your legs a lot. So I was doing half hour feature sets probably way before I should have, but it allowed me to sort of grow at a quicker pace.
Is that because you were in the Midwest, so the Midwest had more stage time available to you?
Yeah, you just get a little lucky with, I mean, it's all a little luck with who you know, what impression you make on a guy. You know, I'm on tour with this guy, Steve Hofstetter, if you're familiar with him.
Yeah.
And he's a great guy. And so he owned a comedy club in Indianapolis. I happened to open for him one night. And then he forgot a sign at the comedy club. And I just brought it to his show the next night. And he was like, you didn't have to do that. And I was like, you know, it's 10 minutes from my house. I might as well. And ever since then, he would just call me whenever he was in Seattle, and he'd be like, hey, drive me around and open for me on these shows. And looking back on video, I'm like, I don't know what he saw in me, because I wasn't really doing that well. But, you know, sometimes it's more about who you hang out with and who you spend your time with and who you are friends with. So I just kind of got a little lucky, to be honest. And
That's okay.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's what rubbed off on you, because he's a great joke writer. Like, he writes really strong bits. So, and yeah, your bits are very strong too, even though they're like conversational, which is like one of my favorite styles. So the fact that that must have rubbed off on you. So you obviously
earned it. I try to take a lot from everybody, you know. Titus was another guy that taught me a lot to write. You know, I got lucky, and again, my dad worked for the radio station in Seattle, so comics would come to town and promote their gigs on his show, and he'd be like, my son's a comedian. They'd be like, great. And then, but some comics were like, tell him to come to the show and I'll meet him, you know? And so, like, I met Titus and he gave me comedy advice. And then every year he would come to town and I'd see him again. He'd be like, you're still doing it? Like, why? You know? And, there was even a point where he was performing at a casino that was like 10 minutes from where I went to high school, maybe even less. But, you know, I was a giant loser in this town. And then, you know, we're in the green room before the show and he kind of goes, he goes, yeah, just keep it up, man. And I'm like, I just worked Rooster Teeth Feathers in California, which is his home club.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, they wouldn't book you if you're terrible. So you must be pretty good. And I go, I'm okay. And then the manager comes back and goes, all right, 5 minutes to showtime. And he goes, you want to do a set? And I was like, yeah, let me change my underwear real quick. Like, this is insane. There's 800 people out there. But, you know, so again, it's getting lucky with great mentors. Steve was great, especially with how to handle a show when it goes wrong. You know, that's what he's most famous for, you know, for better or worse. I mean, he can't, I would take that fame also, but right, you know,
He's just amazingly smart anyway. So like,
just a quick wit guy, yeah, you know?
Yeah. That's funny. I discovered him way before the heckler thing started coming out. So I didn't even know that was a thing. And then I started, because I had albums, I was just like, listen to his albums, like, oh, these are funny.
Yeah.
And then I started seeing more of the heckler things coming up. I was like, oh my gosh, this guy has, I was thinking like, how does he get people to heckle? After a while I realized like, some people probably just start heckling because they know that's what he does, you know?
Well, it's funny now because people heckle him less than normal. Like, it's most like one out of every 10 or 15 shows. Now, okay. The thing I'll say about early on is he just wouldn't let anything go. Like most comics, they hear like a mice. They like if you know, you hear a table talking, you kind of just ignore it and power through it. But if Steve hears two mice enter the showroom, he stops the whole show and goes, what the hell? You know, so that's my little joke to make fun of him. But like, you know, it turned into this thing where now people show up and they want someone else to heckle, but they don't want to be the guy that heckles. So you get really, you know, opening for him, you get really smart crowds and really, for the most part, pretty respectful audiences.
That's interesting. It's funny. I don't think I've ever been heckled ever doing stand-up. I would like to say I have, but I mean, maybe my own dad has heckled me one time, but that's probably about it. Like, that might be it, honestly. Like,
wow, I got to start doing shows with you more often. I don't know how you built this reputation. That's great.
I'm pretty laid back. Like, this is, it's fun. We're here for fun. I want to make you laugh. I don't care. I'm like you, I'll just ignore stuff. If people are talking, unless they're like being loud where it's bothering other people. And then usually I'm like, hey, how's it going over there? Table, whatever. And you know, start talking. And then they kind of like, oh, I don't want to be part of the show.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really turn into heckling too much, but yeah, I've gotten lucky and that would be great. What is your favorite? You said Rooster Teeth Feathers. I wish Danny, my co-host, was here because that's his home club too. So,
oh shoot.
Yeah. So he couldn't be here tonight. Well, that kind of sucks. But what is your favorite club to perform at? Like, what's the club that you, every time you go there, you're like, man, I'm so glad I'm going back to this club or this place. Maybe it's not even a club.
Gosh. You know, it kind of changes. in a weird way, it's kind of not about where the you know, there are some clubs that are just better. I mean, we just did DC Comedy Loft, and there's a difference between clubs that have like really low ceilings and like it's like almost like a fire hazard show, because comedy needs, you know, it is a little viral or you know, contagious. crazy year for that, but you know, I've had good shows at some of my favorite clubs, and I've had some tough shows at some of my favorite clubs. So it's really more about the people, which I've discovered, because sometimes I'll rent out like a rock club, and if I just advertise, you know, people want it. People are watching. They're watching my video and coming to see me. So it's automatically, they're predisposed to like me. But sometimes when you're just opening for whoever, they're there to see that brand of comedy, and you don't necessarily match up, you know. But again, the good clubs will try to book you with similar people. You know, I get to open for Mark Norman recently, which was fun, because awesome. Again, his fans just, they like any joke. As long as it's a joke, they don't care who's the victim or who's the target. They're like, just trick us and we'll love you, you know. So that's a cop-out answer, but Appleton, that's okay. Skyline in Appleton's is probably the best one, because it's the perfect size. You know, it's just about 200, but it's real intimate, and it's in a city with nothing else to do, so it's pretty full all the time, and you know, the good Wisconsin people.
That's awesome. No, I always hear the Midwest is like the place like to go. And I wish I would have started comedy, because I was in the Navy, so I was stationed in Chicago. I wish I would have started comedy in Chicago, and I kick myself for not doing
and
that.
And where are you based out now?
L.A. I'm in L.A. That's right. And I started in L.A., unfortunately. I know. That's like the toughest part, because you're right. Getting the stage time is the hardest part, because I've had to keep building, you know, 5 to 7 minutes at a time, build a half hour, build the, like, you know, right. I'm working on my half hour so I could go do dry bar. So that's hard in LA to build that time.
Yeah.
So
that was interesting too, during the pandemic, is like, I was writing all this material, but I couldn't really perform it a lot except for like Zoom shows or whatever. And then I started coming back, and I wasn't, you know, even the theater, like Brian Regan was doing comedy clubs, because they weren't allowed to do huge thousand seat theaters. So, you know, we really got relegated to the opening spots. And like, so I was again building that album like 15 minutes at a time, and then just taping it together and being like, I hope that works, you know? So it's really interesting to do that.
So did you not record that album all at once? Is that just like,
no, I put did. Together? I did. Okay. I did record it all at once. I guess the writing process wasn't as, you know, it wasn't, thematic. I'd only told it all in order like once before that, you know.
Wow.
At a certain point, it was like, I've done 15 here and this 15 here and this 15 here, but I've never told it all together, because sometimes you'll find, for example, you'll snap a punchline or two, or you'll, you know, one punchline. It's sort of Rubik's Cubey, where you get one side fixed and then it kind of messes up the other side. So you have to be really careful to, you know, not cheat, I guess, you know.
Well, for doing it 15 minutes at a time, I felt like you really had that flow well for that whole, I mean, really grew to the crescendo. So that's insane. And you only performed it one time before you recorded it, that full hour like that?
Yeah, well, I had done like half of the album was sort of older material. You know, a lot of the stuff that was like newer was all like the COVID stuff, to be honest. So
it was good stuff too, by the way.
I wasn't sure how well that stuff would fit. And also like the reality show stuff and all that. But like half of that was ready to be recorded, and I tried to record it in February. And I tried to record it myself, which is always the stubborn move where I'm like, no, I'll save $500 and do it myself. And then it doesn't turn out well. And you're like, all right, well, I'll hire someone this time. And so I had rescheduled the recording for like June or July, and then everything kind of crapped out on us. So I was kind of holding on to some of that material, But I think it works out for the better, because to me, the album is so solid that there's a real hour of jokes on there. It's not, there's not a ton of filler to me. There's not a lot of stuff that, you know, the laughs per minute are there. So, you know, the growth that I did in the year and a half of COVID leading up to the album, I think was worth it, you know, hopefully.
I think it was amazing. So is your process to write stuff, or do you have like, and how does that work? Do you like come up with a premise and then you start to do it? Or is it like something happened and now you want to grow that out as a joke? Like, what's your kind of process?
Yeah, it's all of the above, to be honest. Again, going back to one of the things Titus taught me, that it took me 10 years to even understand, let alone put into practice. But he always said, don't be afraid to not be funny. Because in the sense of like, if you're writing and you go, well, that sucks, you're just defeating yourself before you're even starting. Mm-hmm. So what started in the pandemic was me going, oh, well, we're not really allowed to perform, so what work can I do on my career? Well, I can focus on my writing, and I can, we all have a premise of COVID that we're all learning the same things at the same time. So in a way, the way Andrew Schultz kind of made a joke of like, someone's going to win the pandemic, which turned out to be him.
Yeah.
I wanted to also feel like I was proving my worth, and I was getting free money from the government. So I was like, I better make it worth their while, you know, like if I'm, if I'm claiming that I'm working as a comedian, I better have something to show for it. So it's a lot of like, you got to have conversations, you know, sometimes you riff something and then you tweet it and it gets 200 likes and you're like, oh, I'm a genius, it came to me right away. And other times it's like, I think of it like Cold Stone Creamery sometimes, where they take the ice cream and they throw it down and then they go, what do we want here? Some sprinkles, and they like punch the ice cream and they're like mashing it up. And you really, so a lot of times what I'll do is I'll take like a premise and I'll put it on a Word document and then I'll stare at it for 3 days and go, what is in here? And it is a lot of effort to write, but you know, you see the results of that over time, especially because it gets so much easier to write jokes. You know, what my podcast is, and fortunately it's not a good listen for people, but we do a podcast where we try to do like 10 minutes of new jokes every week. And with the idea of like, if we can get a couple good ones, then awesome. And what's, you know, what's our that, numbers are called? Low on the, it's called Homeschool with a K, and we didn't really name it appropriately. My friends have a podcast that is really funny called Is This Anything? And I was so jealous of their name, because I was like, that's exactly what I'm trying to do, but I didn't want to steal their name. So if we could rename it, I would call it A Couple Good Ones, because we're just trying to get a couple good jokes, with the theory that like writing a joke is like taking a selfie. You know, it takes 1,000 attempts to have 3 worth posting. Or if you're me, it takes a lot more and some filters, but yeah, so that's the idea, is like, so we're on episode 68. So for 68 weeks in a row, I've tried to write 3 to 5 pages. Some of it's very topical. Some of it's related to whatever's going on in my life. You know, it just, it doesn't have to be funny. It just has to be an attempt at funny. So that's kind of where I go. And then over time, you know, you look back and you've built up so much material that like, as I recorded my album, I'm like, it's a daunting feeling to be like, now I've got to replace all this again. And I worked so hard to get it to be good. And you're like, will I ever be funny again? But then, you know, over time, you, through your writing, you're like, I got some decent stuff in here, and probably now I've got like 20 new minutes, which is great, because
that's awesome.
You know, the album just came out a few weeks ago. So, you know, it's a hard process, but I wanted to get to the point where I was doing it on purpose, you know, instead of just accidentally coming up with stuff. But I wanted to feel like a conveyor belt of, you know, if something happens in my life, My theory also, and this is the last thing I'll say because I've been rambling forever, but my theory is that comedians are, we're always thinking of jokes. We're just writing them down. And I felt that for me this year is the main thing I learned is that I've been thinking of these jokes the whole time. I just didn't put them anywhere. Yep. And so having a podcast that no one listens to makes me feel comfortable because I'm not worried about it. I'm doing it for me. I'm not doing it for, you know, thousands and thousands of streams, you know.
Well, we'll link it in the show notes so that we can get you some more listeners out too. Because
thank you.
That's the thing is this podcast is really all about learning and growing. And yeah. So I write a joke a day, which it's not 5 minutes at the end of the week, but it's, you know, a good 2 minutes of material. And then I can go through it and figure it out. It's something. So yeah. And I really try to take the Seinfeld approach of, you know, don't break the chain, write something new every day. It could be it might even just be a one liner setup punch joke. It might not be tags or other punchlines or anything like that. You're just like, okay, well, I'm gonna do the best I can.
That's why I try to do weekly goals, you know, because some days it's like I got the kids, I got to go to groceries, I gotta do all this stuff, I gotta fly a red eye and perform 10 minutes after I step off the plane. Wow. So, you know, a weekly goal for me is much more attainable because I can take a few days off, or I can go, crap, we're coming up on Friday and we record Monday and I've got one page of premises, so I better actually dedicate some time to it. So, and the other cool thing is that my dad was a former radio host, so he's into podcasting now because he retired, but he still wants to pretend like he has a job. So, we record a weekly podcast where I just test my new jokes out on him. And then, you know, if I can get my dad and his friends to laugh, that's all I'm trying to do in life anyway. So again, back to the wedding moment of like, my dad is proud of me, you know? Yeah. So that's a motivator too, is to have like a set a deadline, because a deadline spurs action, you know?
Now, do you write some on your phone, or do you just sit down at your computer and write it on in a Word document, or how does that process work
for you? I mean, a lot of times, to be honest, it's like late at night. Like, I read a book one time and it said, like, when you're halfway between asleep and awake is when your brain sort of separates from reality. So you can let your mind wander and be a little more creative because you're not bound necessarily by gravity of the real world. So a lot of times it's like the Mitch Hedberg joke where you're like, if I think of an idea late at night, I've either got to get up and write it down or convince myself it wasn't funny in the first place. So it's a lot of like jotting a couple notes down, hopefully. And then, you know, in the morning or whenever I get to it, I transfer it to like a Word document. And I'm a guy that'll type everything out word by word. Yep. And I'll even highlight. What I started doing a few years ago is highlighting the punchlines in red text. So that way I can kind of zoom out. And if it's like a long one page story, I go, oh, there's not even, again, it's about attempts. It's like shots on goal. You know, it's like, it may not get a laugh, but this is where I'm attempting to get a laugh. And so going back to, again, another thing Titus taught me was, you know, and this is extremely difficult, but he would say, every sentence is set up for a punchline. If you're telling a story, it's just a series of one-liners throughout the story. And so you go, well, yeah, that's impossible. But, you know, when you really type it out, you can see, again, you can see dead air. You can see unnecessary details that you can take out of the joke. You can see, you can really get down to each individual word and scalpel this. Even the word "and" that doesn't need to be there, you know, you can just take that out. And so one time I was probably like 7 years into comedy, and I was writing some jokes, and I was like, every other sentence is a punchline. That's impossible. This is the stupidest. And so I was like, I'm gonna go watch one of his specials, and if he's not doing that, I'm gonna text him and call him out. And I sat down and watched Love Is Evil, which is one of my favorites.
Yes. That's a great one.
And I'm just like, what? And I like to watch with subtitles now too, because
I'm not the only weirdo.
Watch the words. I love it because I'm all about the wording, right? So I can go, okay, period. Okay, here's the, well, goddamn, I guess it is possible, you know. But then you remember he's got 20 years on me, so you know, Going back to a piece of advice my friend Gabriel Rutledge told me was be flexible in your definition of success. Mm-hmm. Because some days just getting on stage and writing a new joke is the win. And then other days you need to hold yourself to a higher standard of actually getting it to work and stuff like that. But yeah, man, it's an insanely complicated process, but it's really fun. And it's, I'm so glad that I'm good at it. You know,
you're amazing at it. You're amazing at it.
Thank you. Yeah. I heard a quote one time about like from some comic, like he would rather go back and learn brain surgery than learn to be a comedian again. And I can't think of a truer, you know, it's such a painful journey. But once I feel like you get to the other side, I'm having so much fun now that the 10 years, the back problems from sleeping in my car are all worth it, you know.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear things are going good. I'm glad to see that you're on the road. I think you have a bright future, man. I can't wait for more stuff. So I appreciate the time that you've taken to share this with us. I feel like we're on the same level too, because it's like one of those things where like we do the very similar stuff. So I'm like, all right, yeah. I'm on the right track, because I'm only about, let's see, what was this? I'm about 6.5 years in. So I'm not, you know, I started in LA too. So it's like really,
So you've got a little disadvantage there too.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing I look at too is like, it's the same thing they talk. I listen to like a lot of coaches for like, I'm a big Seahawks fan, and Pete Carroll is really cool, level-headed guy. And so again, I'm also a sports nerd. So I always just want to listen to the coach's analysis. And they always talk about, as long as the process is right, like say like you're dribbling around and you take an open shot and it doesn't go in, they go, oh, bad shot. And it's like, but the thinking was right that got you there. So like that's really what it's, you know, not every shot's going to go in. I mean, even the best baseball players have a 300 hitting percentage, you know. Yeah. So if you think about that in terms of jokes, you know, 7 out of 10 jokes you write are going to be not good.
Yeah.
But
I've been there.
But it's like, yeah, but as long as you trust the process and you build your process fundamentally in the correct way, you know, which it sounds like you are. So, you know, all you need in that then is reps, you know, the 10,000 hours supposedly.
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to build that set for dry bar. That's the big thing I'm working on. I had the opportunity in March, but I didn't have a half hour, and then the pandemic shut everything down and I had no stage time. So I was like, okay. Yeah. And then I really went back. What's funny is I really went back and started watching dry bar specials and seeing the ones that had great success, and they all were thematic. They had some sort of theme to them. And I was like, okay, my jokes have kind of a theme, but not an overall story theme. So I really went back and started writing from scratch. And I wrote, all my stuff is about being a dad to girls, because I didn't grow up with sisters. I don't have that experience. So I really wrote like how girls have affected my life. And it's really just been this long story. And I felt like what's funny is I watched a lot of Chris Titus stuff, and a lot of his stuff is story of his life and this journey. You know, start this thing happening at the beginning of my life, and then it tied to this thing at the end of my life, or what's happening in my life now. I was like, that's what I want. I want to be a genius like that. I'm not going to be that genius, but the goal was,
I mean, particularly it was great at that too. Like telling a story from so many different sides and leading you different ways. And again, I studied him forever. And the dry bar things are interesting, because you want something that's a little clickbaity almost, you know, you need something that's like a bomb shelter, you know, you need some dumb hook to get the people. And so, there's a ton of it, again, like filming that thing. I had no idea what it was going to be. I was like, oh, 6 Mormon kids will see this, but it's a little $1,000 gig. And then it, you know, it turned out to be the best thing for my career, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I had my, my friend Jeff Shaw did that. And he, now he's everywhere. And then he did America's Got Talent, and he's done like all kinds of stuff. I'm like, man, he's amazing. Great. And then my buddy, David Studebaker filmed, he took the March slot that I was going to get. He took that slot and recorded, and his hasn't come out yet. I'm hoping it will. And then when his comes out, we're going on tour together, because you know, that's just going to give me more time to build and do stuff. And
that's great.
I'm excited. Well, thank you so much. Please tell everybody where they could find you, where they could find your podcast, the name of it, all that stuff.
Andrew J. Rivers on whatever app that you use, Instagram, YouTube, OnlyFans. And you know, we had to pay bills during the pandemic. And the podcast is Homeschool with a K. That's on iTunes and stuff. But if I have like a link tree now, which is what the kids are doing. So if you go to my Twitter or my Instagram bio, the link is to my link tree, and that lists every single platform of your choosing, you know. And if people do follow me on like Eventbrite, you know, that's where I'm producing more of my own shows. So you can find out my tour dates the tour dates that mean the most to me, because I get 100% of the ticket sales as opposed to like just a flat rate with the club, you know. So whatever service you believe in, YouTube is great, because that you know, that means it's good if it's uploaded there, you know.
Yeah, well, and then
Facebook
also,
and Twitter is where I test all the bad jokes, you know.
Well, yeah, and if you guys haven't listened either, I think it's, I know I got it on Apple. So Apple, is it on Spotify and stuff too, your new album?
Yeah, it's on Spotify. I get 0.005 cents every time you stream it. So play it for your cats while you go to work or something, and they'll be addicted to watching reality TV when you come home, but that's not my fault.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you so much, Andrew. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please go check out Andrew. Check out all his stuff. He's super funny. You'll love him. You'll be laughing in your car. People will be looking at you like you're a crazy person, but that's okay, because that's what life is about, having fun, enjoying it. So please like, subscribe, go to comedypreneur.com, check out the blog post, go to YouTube and watch this, and like and subscribe there. We're growing there. And please leave us a review for the podcast. And Andrew, again, thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. Bye.